What do women want? What do men want? And the $64 million question, what do CXOs, meaning chief executive officers, chief information officers, chief technology officers, financial officers, security officers, marketing officers, want as well? Or more tellingly, what do they need? What are CXOs' top priorities today, and who better to ask than directions analyst Barry Briggs, who is the former CTO of Microsoft's own IT unit? Welcome to the Directions on Microsoft Briefing podcast. I'm Mary Jo Foley, the editor-in-chief here at Directions. I'm your host for this series of podcasts designed for those interested in the Microsoft Enterprise IT ecosystem. Hi, Barry. Thank you so much for doing the podcast with me today.
Hi, Mary Jo. Looking forward to it.
Nice. So I remember a few years ago, it was our very first podcast, actually, that we did at Directions. And you and I were talking together, and you said to me, it's all about the cloud. Everything's about moving and using Azure, Microsoft 365, and Dynamics 365. Is it still the case?
Yeah. And by the way, it seems like just yesterday we recorded that, doesn't it?
I know, it does.
Yeah. So, you know, I think it's been almost 4 years, and we've kind of moved into a new phase now. I think if you ask most organizations, they tell you that, you know, we're now well and truly entrenched in the cloud, right? And we've adjusted or are adjusting the operating models to be more cloud-centric. And that means everything from procurement processes to development processes to cost management processes and so forth. And the reason behind all that, I think, is that if you look across the spectrum of technology vendors, where are they innovating? Well, they're innovating in the cloud. Hardly anybody's innovating on premises anymore. Mm-hmm. Now, that having been said, I suspect there's a reckoning coming. And let me explain what I mean by that. So on the one hand, there is tremendous opportunity in the cloud, and people are moving there. They're putting all their data there. They're taking advantage of all kinds of advanced capabilities like Power BI and artificial intelligence and so forth. Mm-hmm. However, on the other hand, it's hard to imagine a customer who's saying it's actually cheaper in the cloud than it was on-prem. Right. You know, and part of that is because, you know, there's so much more capability and you need to take advantage of it in order to get the competitive advantage that you really need. On the other hand, yeah, it is costing a lot. Mm-hmm. So I think there's a bit of a reckoning coming. And what does that mean? Well, I think the really savvy companies are starting to rethink their adoption of the public cloud and move back to what we've been calling the edge. And, you know, Mary Jo, you and I did a podcast on that a few months ago. And, you know, basically the point is that there are some things you have to do on-prem or on location, things that require specific latency or scenarios where connectivity isn't necessarily guaranteed, like a cruise ship, you know, or where there are regulations in play. And that's a big deal because we're already starting to see the rise or the reincarnation of what some people are calling sovereign clouds, where data has to stay within a specific country. And some people simply want to run their apps where they can see them, even if they're using an Azure portal or Arc to manage them. So what we're seeing then is this kind of rebalancing of where your IT assets live.
Mm-hmm. We even did a podcast a few months back, where we talked about the idea of cloud repatriation, because there are some people who are saying, I don't want it just the edge. I want to take everything out of the cloud and go back to the old days because I think I can do it better now. And that's definitely not for everybody, but there are some customers who think they can do it better than Microsoft, AWS, and Google.
Yeah, my own personal view on this is that completely abandoning the cloud, if you're thinking about doing that, then you're probably doing the cloud wrong.
Yeah.
Right. So, you know, you're not understanding the core paradigm of how to do cost management in the cloud, how to manage it in the cloud and so forth. What I do see happening is what I talked about before, is that there is this notion of there are some things that are better on-prem or at a remote location, like on that oil platform or on that cruise ship. And as we start to think about, you know, sort of now spidering out from the cloud to manage all these assets remotely, we're getting, I think, a much more intelligent use of cloud assets as well as on-prem assets.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think that's the right way and the good way to look at this for sure.
Yeah.
Okay, you alluded briefly to data there, and I know you and many others say data is the new oil, but what are CXO's top concerns when it comes to data right now?
Yeah. So, you know, it's kind of become axiomatic that data is a core asset, or if not the core asset, of every organization, business, or government. Mm-hmm. When CIOs think about data, they're really thinking about two things at the highest level, both protecting it and getting the most value from it. And sometimes those are contradictory goals, and they're vast and complex undertakings for sure. So when I think about, you know, protecting data, you know, obviously that's about preventing unauthorized access to it, you know, be it either intentional or unintentional. You know, one of the things we've talked about in some of our reports is Copilot finding data that it's not supposed to see, you know, and you have to go to all the trouble of setting up all the correct permissions and RBAC and so forth to make sure that your data is protected against Copilot finding it. Mm-hmm. And, you know, we're learning that there's a lot of nuances about protecting your data. For example, one of the features of communication compliance, which is part of Microsoft Purview, is walling off one team within your organization from another team so that they cannot talk to each other, which seems weird. But, you know, if you're talking about, you know, a large financial institution, can a wealth management organization talk to the investment banking part of the organization? Well, maybe there are regulations that don't allow that. Mm-hmm. You know, preventing someone from accidentally copying sensitive data onto a thumb drive, and people do that, or copying it up to a consumer OneDrive site. You know, all those things are things that CIOs and CISOs have to think about. And of course, that's not even thinking about the big bad world out there, mm-hmm. where there are all sorts of bad actors trying to get access to your secrets and, you know, making sure that all your PII and PHI are treated with the respect that they deserve and so on. So, you know, I mean, getting value for your data, on the other hand, you know, on the other hand, everyone recognizes that with the huge amounts of cheap storage, we can store enormous amounts of data, everything from logs and telemetry to, you know, audit you know, all sorts of media types and so forth. And that enables all sorts of interesting use cases like preventative maintenance, detecting when a device is failing, send the service person to fix before it does. You know, but again, you know, we talked about this a moment ago, you know, CIOs are wrestling with the best way to extract this value. Mm-hmm. Should I buy Fabric? Should I get Snowflake? Should I get Databricks? You know, all those things have, you know, tremendous value propositions. Well, on the other hand, they're expensive, not just in terms of licensing the product, but maybe in some ways, more importantly, transforming the data to be consumed by them and be used in a value-generating way by them.
Right, right. And I know Fabric, because Andy Snodgrass, who works here, talks a lot about it. Still pretty immature, right? I mean, it's like a year old or something, so a lot of things are still in preview, and that has to be part of the equation too when you're calculating what to use, I would think.
Yeah, and you know, it's really interesting. You know, I think of it, you know, maybe a topic that you and I and Andy can chat about sometime, but I think there's this war of the titans going on between mm-hmm. Fabric, Snowflake, and Databricks. And mm-hmm. you know, if you think about Fabric, you know, sort of the headline of this is Fabric is kind of immature, but it's still part of the Microsoft ecosystem in some ways. If you're a Microsoft customer, it's sort of the, you know, natural place to go. Snowflake has a very advanced architecture in separating compute from data. Databricks has incredible flexibility when it comes to the choice of LLMs and how they use AI. You know, so there's a war going on in big data. Huge value to be gained. Huge costs probably involved in taking advantage of them as well.
Right, right. Well, let's switch to another giant topic, security here. So Microsoft is very obsessed right now about security because it's had some problems and now it's got the Secure Future Initiative and all. But if you're a CXO, particularly a CIO, how big a deal should this be to you? And I mean, the simple answer is it should be a huge deal, but give us a little more color on that.
Yeah. So, you know, I think for almost every company, if not every company, it's now a board level issue, right? Right. CSOs have to report to boards of directors, and rightly so, right? Because it's security is an existential issue. I'm going to tell you a little story. There's a little town in Texas. It's a population, I think, 5,000. It's called, believe it or not, this is the real name, Muleshoe. And that's its real name. And back in January, they noticed water spewing from the top of their water tower, right? Long story short, it was discovered that hackers, Russian hackers, had messed with the pumps that fill the tower. That's the way these things work, is there's a pump that connects to a lake and it pumps the water up into the tower, so forth. The whole SCADA system that runs that. Anyway, the hackers had broke into the system that runs that, turned the pumps on, left them on. And here's the point. It's a cute little story. Somebody figured it out and they fixed it. But the point is, if Russian hackers are targeting a tiny little town in West Texas, they're targeting you.
Right.
Full stop. So, you know, there's, you know, to combat all this, there's just a tremendous amount of investment that any company has to make. It's the cost of doing business now. You know, you have to have a knowledgeable CISO. You have to use security incident and event management systems, mm-hmm. like Sentinel, for example. You have to a lot of companies do red teaming, chaos testing, fuzzing. So you use the security design lifecycle or some other secure, security-centric development process as you build your applications. So it's not just, you know, throw some technology at the problem. This is what we call the Microsoft, a PPT problem, people, processes, people, processes, and technology problem. It's all of those.
Right. Yep, got it. Okay. I am going to take a little quick break to clear our plates and our minds here. And I want to talk about our world-famous Microsoft licensing boot camps that Directions does. So if you have not had the opportunity to participate in one of these multi-day learning events, you are missing out. I got to go to Atlanta last year for the boot camp, and I really was impressed by the quality and the quantity of information that was presented. You can talk one-on-one to the Directions analysts who are there. You can talk to the other customers who are there, and that's what really makes the event. It's the place to update and ensure your knowledge is current about everything to do with Microsoft products and licensing. So we've got another in-person boot camp coming up pretty soon. It's going to be January 13th to 15th in sunny Orlando, Florida, hopefully after all the hurricanes have passed. And there'll be one more virtual boot camp this year from December 9th to 13th if you'd rather attend virtually. There are other events all throughout this year, next year. There's an October 28th to November 1st virtual boot camp. Day of the Dead, any significance? Maybe if you don't know the latest on Microsoft licensing and negotiations, you could be dead in the water. Yeah, that's why I am not in charge of the marketing copy around here. So anyway, if you don't get to attend a boot camp or that's not really your thing, we also offer a lot of different advisory services. We've got EA negotiation support. We have Microsoft strategy assessments. And all of these are places where the Directions analysts help you one-on-one with your specific Microsoft product questions and licensing issues. Go to directionsonmicrosoft.com or email info@directionsonmicrosoft.com so you can learn more about all of the different services that we offer. Okay, back to CXOs with former Microsoft CXO Barry. All right, you and your job here also cover Microsoft Purview, which is the company suite of compliance services. So Microsoft's been investing very heavily in recent years in Purview. My question for you is, do CIOs really need this, or can they do this some other way?
Yeah, first of all, yes, they need it. And I'll say that, you know, I'm really quite bullish on Purview. And I think that it's one of Microsoft's, unheralded strengths. It's to me, it's a real competitive advantage for Microsoft, and it provides capabilities that are unique among the cloud providers and capabilities that are, frankly, I think very important to CIOs, chief counsels, risk officers, even boards of directors. So why? Well, we talked a little bit about security and risk management above. And I think everybody on this call understands that there has just been an explosion of regulatory activity over the past 10 years. I mean, I think in 2018, everybody's eyes were opened when the GDPR, the General Data Protection Regulation, was enacted by the European Commission. They were both astounded by the fact that it happened, as well as by the penalties that are involved, up to 4% of annual revenues. And the fact that very quickly, following the enactment of the GDPR, lots and lots of other countries and U.S. states, although not the United States federal government, enacted similar privacy regulations. And that's just privacy. There's right. a similar explosion happening in the financial space and in the healthcare space with HIPAA and so forth, And so, knowing whether or not you are compliant and complying is super important. In fact, my rule for compliance is that, you get this no extra charge, is that you have to, with respect to compliance, there are two rules. One is you have to comply. Right. Two is you have to be able to prove that you complied. In other words, you have to have, strong reporting that if somebody comes and asks you, are you in accordance with this? So Purview can help you with that by providing assessments of your compliance posture. It can detect and alert potentially bad or illegal behavior by employees in real time, such as sexual harassment, insider trading. The e-discovery features, which have gotten much deeper in the last 5 years or so, mm-hmm. Are essential, right? In this highly litigious world. So, if you look in particular at the E5 features of e-discovery, they're quite thorough. So, all these things are things that in today's world are absolutely essential.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Let's switch gears completely now and talk about low code, no code. We get a lot of questions from our members here at Directions about things like Power Apps, the whole Power Platform. And I'm curious how you think CIOs should be thinking about this whole low code, no code space. Is this really like the new IT?
Yeah, it's a good question. And, certainly a big push by Microsoft with Power Apps and Power Platform. And being an old school IT person, I would say that, and I think I'm somewhat justified in saying this, that this is the latest incarnation of shadow IT. Shadow IT, just to digress for a second, is something that was the bane of every IT professional's existence. Why? Because once the data gets outside of the trusted boundaries of IT, who knows what happens to it? There could be, the data could be changed in ways that mislead people. There could be compliance violations. All sorts of bad things can happen once data and applications get outside the realm of IT. So that's the bad thing. The good thing is, allowing what Microsoft calls citizen developers to write their own applications. Well, these days, IT can't write all the apps. I mean, it's just that simple. Sometimes you just need a quick application to do X, Y, or Z. And so having to write a requirements document and go through all the processes, that it takes to get something into the IT machine, which can be a long process. Right. It's just not appropriate. So what do you do? one thing I think that IT has to think about is how do they put governance around their data, right? So, mm-hmm. So how do you, at every point that it's used, the data has to be trustworthy. And so there's, you know, setting out the boundaries for doing that is essential. You know, working with users to set up the appropriate connectors to IT systems. If you have SAP, if you have Dynamics, if you have other applications, other enterprise applications, how do you set the guardrails so that it's allowed to, so that, you know, the citizen developers can write these apps, mm-hmm. but do it in a way that's safe and compliant.
Right. I think the other thing I've seen too is Microsoft is trying to make it easier for citizen developers, as they call them, to actually purchase and license all these things like Power Apps and Power Platform. And so now they're having to go back and put some controls in place for administrators, because they saw that by making it really easy for people to just buy these things and start using them, that it was creating havoc in a lot of organizations. So now they're adding more guardrails for administrators to be able to see who's buying these licenses and who's running them and can I shut them off. So that, yeah. I think that tells you what's going on right there, right?
Yeah. And, you know, I mean, again, a topic for another podcast perhaps, but, you know, there are some licensing pitfalls that users can run into with Power Apps that can cause them to have costs spiral out of control.
Yeah, for sure. Okay, we're talking about governance. So I know you just finished up a report for Directions about Azure governance, and it's aimed at CXOs. Give us a little summary of what you found.
Yeah, it's actually not published yet, but hopefully by the time this gets out, it will be.
Okay.
So the governance. So governance is the CIO's job at the end of the day. That is what the CIO does. Mm-hmm. When I think about it, I have been asked, how do I implement governance? And there's really no single prescribed organizational structure for governance. Different organizations may structure it as appropriate. You may have a single team with a person who runs the governance organization. You may have several different teams, security and risk management, compliance, and so forth. But in short, when I think about Azure governance in particular and governance generally, I think about having to answer three questions. And the first question is, is the organization using Azure any technology in the way that it prescribes? And that means standards, right? And, if you think about, dev teams inside of an IT organization, it's very easy for them to pick from a wide spectrum of possible technology options. For example, I need a database. Well, there's like 10 or 15 different database technologies that I could use. Mm-hmm. Don't pick the one you just feel like using. part of the governance organization is to prescribe which technologies are quote unquote approved mm-hmm. by the org. And, right. Approved doesn't mean one's necessarily better than the other, but you want to have one or two or three just so that, you simplify support, you make skills fungible from one organization to another. So, we're a SQL Server shop, we're a Postgres shop, and so forth. And that makes IT just simpler.
Right.
And so usually what you see is, for example, an organization will pick one database technology for their mission critical applications, Oracle or an Azure SQL, and maybe one database technology for their non-mission critical, maybe one of the open source database technologies. Mm-hmm. The second question is, is the organization getting from Azure or from their technologies what they expect from their investment? In other words, are they getting the ROI from all the money that they're spending? And you have to set up the appropriate cost accounting mechanisms to be able to do that, and that involves setting up subscriptions. It involves setting up tagging and so forth, and setting up the FinOps operations to make sure that there's not suddenly spikes in costs that they can't necessarily explain, and so forth. So, keeping costs under control is the second one. And finally, the third question I always think about when I think about governance is the organization following its roadmap from the as-is state to the to-be state? right? So I think, every organization, every IT organization has goals. There's no IT organization that's static. We're always transforming at one rate or another. So you may have goals like all of our applications will be containerized by 2028, or all of our applications will support multi-factor authentication by some date, and so forth. And having a roadmap of, okay, by the end of 2025, sales applications will all support MFA. And by the end of 2026, legal applications will all support MFA. You actually may want to do it the other way around, but you get the idea, that there's a roadmap with defined milestones along the way. And you want to track that to make sure that you're staying on track. That's what governance does.
Right.
Now, the answers to these questions require input from pretty much every team inside IT. The enterprise architecture team, the information security team, cost management, dev teams, risk management teams, and the answers rely upon setting those outcomes and reporting on the extent to which they've been achieved.
All right. You make it sound so simple, but I know it's not. There's a lot of working pieces there.
quite the opposite, in fact, yeah.
Okay, well, I know you've been waiting for this, and probably listeners too. We can't stop without talking about the hot topic of the day, which, of course, is AI.
Networking, right? Oh,
no. Networking. It was just 2 years ago that OpenAI introduced ChatGPT, and that was a world-changing event. So then Microsoft soon after released a whole slew of co-pilots. We've been struggling here to keep up with them, and I'm sure customers have as well. And at that point, a lot of companies just jumped in. I think there's some FOMO, fear of missing out, right? But I'm curious if you think CIOs at this point, a couple years in, are feeling like they're getting value for their money out of these technologies.
Well, they're certainly asking the question.
Right.
Right. And to your point, Mary Jo, an awful lot of companies jumped right in. They spent the $30 per user per month buy Microsoft Copilot, for Microsoft 365 Copilot or whatever it's called these days. Seems to go through, name changes are, there's too many MBAs at Microsoft. I think there's no question that the CIOs increasingly recognize that AI is an integral part of their planning. It should be part of their roadmap, which we just talked about, part of their application strategy going forward. There's lots of use cases where AI makes a whole lot of sense. We're seeing AI being used to replace IVR systems, and that'll be wonderful, right? Because, we all hate your call is very important. Please continue to hold. If that could be replaced by something that's a little bit more human interactive, I think that would be a positive step forward. And where we see, in other use cases, I was talking to a friend of mine in Microsoft who said that using an LLM, a large language model, to parse error messages from systems works very well and can replace or at least augment the work of SREs, site reliability engineers, and so forth. That having been said, sort of the general case of AI and using LLMs like Copilot and so forth does require a huge amount of work in preparing their data and their data estate to make it ready for AI. We talked a little bit about protecting your data. And so that means setting up the appropriate permissions, setting up the appropriate sensitivity labels, using Purview, as a matter of fact, so that if somebody asks, what's my CEO salary, maybe that doesn't get answered properly and so forth. And I think that, that work of preparing data and tidying up the data estate so that it is ready to be consumed appropriately by AI is going to occupy us, all of us, probably for the next 3 to 5 years.
Definitely. For sure. But, there's another risk here, right? Like, look at what just happened with the HoloLens. Microsoft just announced it's being canceled. After 2027, it's no longer going to be supported. But, You know, that was a case where Microsoft seemed like it was all in, and like a lot of different divisions of the company were working to create apps and services to work with the HoloLens. So I wonder if you think AI is different, like, and how is it different?
Yeah, I don't think it's a passing fad. I do think it's strategic, and we are still working to understand its place in the sort of overall enterprise ecosystem.
Right.
Now, everybody needs it, right? And, you know, and there's still, the hype is still pretty loud around it. We're not currently the current fad is, and maybe it's not a fad, but current fad is around AI agents, for example. And
right.
Salesforce at their recent Dreamforce convention talked a lot about agentic AI and, you know, using it to replace humans in a lot of cases and improve productivity around their CRM applications. And we talked about replacing IVR systems and augmenting many labor intensive human interaction components of a business process. It's important to remember, though, you know, it has its place. It's not magic. You know, as I've said countless times, you know, we have to remember that AI at the end of the day is just math.
Right.
It's just probable. It's probabilistic math. At least the LLMs are. We think it's just, figuring out at the end of the day, it's just figuring out sort of what the most likely next word in its response is going to be based on the prompt. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, it's math, and it gets things wrong occasionally. I actually asked. I have to tell you.
I know you're going to tell me the story
because it's
so good.
I actually asked Microsoft 365. I was doing a demo. I actually asked Microsoft 365 Copilot, "What is Microsoft Fabric?" And it answered with, "It's a textile." and it went on and on and on for 200 or 300 words about that. So it's not magic. And, you know, I would say, both the technology and our understanding of how to use it are still pretty immature.
It's true. I love the Fabric story because, I mean, who wouldn't think Microsoft Fabric was a textile unless you really know Microsoft, right?
Yeah.
No, that was good. All right. Well, thank you so much, Barry. This is a whirlwind tour of the CXO space, but it was really good. I thought it was very interesting. Thank you for the time.
It was my pleasure.
To close, I would like to remind our listeners they can find more coverage of all of these kinds of topics on directions on Microsoft.com. Thank you for listening. If you have questions, comments, or if you have a topic that you would like to hear the directions analysts cover in one of these podcasts, please do not hesitate to contact me via Twitter, or X as it's called now, at Mary Jo Foley. And speaking of X, give us a follow at DirectionsMSFT on Twitter for all of the latest Microsoft Enterprise product and licensing information. Thank you so much.